From school uniforms to single-gender classrooms, a look inside turning around a struggling public middle school here in Jacksonville. That's just ahead. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you had a great weekend. First Coast Connect starts you off at 9 every morning, and now never miss a show. Catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Just ahead, we've got a look inside the transformation at Eugene Butler Middle School as we speak to the reporter. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, protesters speak out against the circus as it comes to town this Friday, plus Cole Pepper with all the week's sports, all of that and more ahead. But first this morning, from school uniforms to single-gender classrooms, a bold plan to turn around a struggling middle school in the city is meeting with both challenges and successes. There's a fascinating series right now in the Times Union, a look inside Eugene J. Butler Middle School. Tessa Duval is education, children, and families reporter with the Times Union and joins us now with more. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And what are your thoughts about the big changes taking place in some of our public schools? For example, at Butler, there are now school uniforms and single-gender classrooms. What do you think about that? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show, or you can weigh in on Facebook. So, Tessa, you're doing a three-part series on Butler, which actually has a new name as well. It's known as Eugene Butler. Why did you pick this school to focus on?
You know, it was interesting. I started attending school board meetings. I started going to community meetings. And I kept hearing about all of these things happening at Butler. There were so many programs in place. People were talking about how the school was different. And it really caught my attention. You know, it's not every day that you start to hear about all these positive things happening at a school like Butler. And so I just started going over there, hanging out in the school, getting to know the people that were involved. And I've always been so impressed every time I go over there, how articulate the kids are, how passionate the teachers are. It's really remarkable what's happening at that school.
What did you find? What's happening there?
These kids are taking ownership for their work. It's absolutely incredible. They care. They want to do well. They want to be leaders. And really, they want people to know that their school is a good school. They know what people say about Butler, and they want you to know that's not the same.
What were people saying about Butler?
The quote that sticks out in my mind that one of the young women told me was, "Oh, Butler, you've got to be tough to go to Butler."
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know, my daughter is a middle schooler, and she saw the front page article in the paper, and she said to me, "Mom, I've heard it's not safe to go there." She hears that from her other classmates at her middle school. So the kids at Butler want to change that reputation, and so does the principal, so do the teachers.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it really impacts kids when they know that people are saying things like that about them. You know, they hear that. They know that impacts them, and they carry that with them. And they're holding themselves to a higher standard now. They are so proud to wear their blazers. They are so proud to be a student at the Young Men or the Young Women's Leadership Academies. They are so ready for this community to know that good things are happening at their school.
And let us know your thoughts about the transformation of Butler Middle School in the city and how this will potentially impact public schools district-wide. Give us a call with your thoughts about our school system at 549-2937. Now, you mentioned a Young Men's and a Young Women's Leadership Academy at Eugene J. Butler Middle School with uniforms. These are changes that Superintendent Nicolai Vitti envisioned and enacted, correct?
Correct. So when he arrived at Duval in 2012, Butler was one of the schools that he began to hear a lot of things about. And to quote him in the story that is in today's paper, he says, "I knew we had to do things differently." And so they begin to have the discussion about what can we do. You know, Butler became single gender because Dr. Vitti had seen that work in several other places, had heard success stories. And so when it was implemented here, you know, within 1 year, they've begun to see some really, really strong results. Discipline issues have absolutely plummeted. Grades are coming back up. You know, no one is saying this is going to be an A school next year, but it seems to be working so far. And you'll read about in tomorrow's paper how the district is actually thinking about expanding this even further.
Single gender ed.
Single gender education could be popping up in several elementary schools.
Interesting. And why is single gender education seen as being effective with kids in these grades?
You know, in middle school, it really just eliminates so many distractions. You know, I've talked to a lot of kids, dozens of kids at this school, and it's so funny because you ask the girls and they say, well, no one picks on us. You know, we're not nervous to answer questions in class anymore. You know, you have the boys who are a little more apprehensive. They're a little bit of a harder sell. You know, oh, we have to learn how to talk to girls eventually, you know. And you push them and you say, but aren't you more focused? Yeah.
they're not distracted by hormones and
right.
crushes. And,
right.
and now what about the uniforms? The kids at Butler are now wearing blazers.
Yes.
What's the dress code?
These kids look sharp, let me tell you. So the girls can wear one of their plaid skirts. They can also wear khakis, collared shirt every day, usually a white Oxford, has a school crest on it. They have ties, they have blazers, and the school really enforces when you are wearing your blazer, you are supposed to carry yourself with pride. You are a young woman or a young man who represents the school and everything that we stand for, and you need to act accordingly.
Now, what's Butler's school grade as of today?
Butler is an F.
And they want to move from up to like a D or a C, correct?
Yes.
And are they on pace to do that?
You know, it's too soon to say. With changing state standards this year, it's really going to be hard to measure. But going forward, you know, several years from now, there are district leaders, school leaders who really think that Butler can eventually be a very competitive school.
And if Butler proves out to be a successful model, you think this will show around at other elementary schools, maybe even other middle schools in the county?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think that's something they're still exploring at this point. But, you know, Dr. Vitti, and you will read this in tomorrow's paper, that Dr. Vitti has said that several elementary schools, about 5 to 10, are exploring the possibility of single gender classes or single gender grades. And that's huge because this is only 1 year of the Butler experiment. And they're already looking at how it can move forward.
And let us know what you think about this. As Eugene J. Butler Middle School, now with Girls and Boys Leadership Academies, looks at single gender education and school uniforms to bring up their school grade and their school morale. What do you think about this model going around to other schools in the area? Because that could happen. 549-2937. Susan in Deerwood. Hi, Susan. Good morning.
Hi. Hi. How are you?
Great. Thanks. Thanks for calling.
Good. I am calling in because I have worked with several groups in the past, I guess, 10 years and with Butler. And we're actually just finishing up a service project with the Lynx and the Leadership Academy. And I just wanted to comment that I think that people from the community coming in to Eugene Butler is part of the genesis of the new attitude of the student. I am in favor of whatever we can do. I don't think it's actually necessary for the children to have the single gender classrooms, but I'm in favor of whatever will work at that particular school, because I am noticing we started about 10 years ago with one group, and the parents, I just think the parents, once you interact with the parents and you interact with the students, you find that the attitude changes because people see people outside the community coming in and really caring about what's happening to the students in their school. And so I applaud your work, and I'm just so happy to see that somebody is taking an interest in what's going on in the neighborhood.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Susan. That's Susan in Deerwood. Calls coming in from all over town, 549-2937. Lori's on the line. Hi, Lori. Fleming Island, is it?
Yes, hi. How are you today?
Great, thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree completely with what you're saying. I think that the uniforms can help, whatever works, but it's not a gender issue. Boys and girls can learn together well. And typically, it's just a few offenders that kind of spoil the soup and make it difficult. So the goal is to get perhaps the students who have learning differences and have behavioral issues on board and buying into the community and seeing it as valuable and wanting to contribute to the school in a positive way and making a difference through community efforts and family involvement.
Yeah, thank you, Lori. That's Lori Fleming Island. Not everyone is on board with the idea of school uniforms and single-gender classrooms, we need to point out, Tessa, right?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And even, you know, like she just said, it's not single-gender alone that is doing this. You know, the kids even acknowledge that not everyone is bought in, and it's something that a lot of the students are really frustrated with. You know, they do want to be leaders. They want their school to have a good reputation. They want to learn. And they are so upset when one or two kids disrupts a class because they know they're all set back by that. So the kids are aware, and they want that to change as well.
Now, something else Nicolae Vitti has instituted in Duval County Public Schools is a parent academy to get parents more involved. How is that affecting Butler Middle School?
You know, at Butler, they are really making an effort to get parents in the door. You know, for example, Cotillion was an event that took place in early May, and in order for the young women to have dresses to wear, parents took part in a meeting, and because of that, their daughters were able to have a dress to wear. So they really are trying to engage parents. You know, teachers are telling me that they are calling home when the student does something good. It's a positive phone call home, and that hasn't always happened either. So really, they are trying to get the parents involved, where that parent involvement necessarily hasn't been there before.
Nadia in Jacksonville. Hi, Nadia. Happy Monday. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to say that at the Foundation Academy, we have had single gender classes for fifth through eighth grade for the last 20 years, and we think it's fantastic and so glad to hear that other schools in Duval County are finally thinking about it. And we're more than happy to be a model school for multiple reasons. So I look forward to helping support single-gender schools.
Thanks, Nadia. All right, let's go to Brian in Ponte Vedra. Hello, Brian. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I just wanted to first commend the students on taking pride in their school. I think that's a first-rate step. And then I had a question and a comment. My comment would be, I think, in general, we need to, in the state of Florida and not just Jacksonville, we need to stop shaming students in schools by giving them school grades. You know, it's great to be able to have the kids take pride in their school. I think that's great. But when we, you know, basically say on the air or anyplace else, well, it's an F school, that doesn't make me feel good as a student if I were to go there. And then finally, my question would be, what kind of social programs has the district taken up at Butler to really address probably some of the poverty issues in the surrounding area?
Yeah.
And I'll take my question off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Let's talk about both of his points. The A through F grading system for schools was instituted under former Governor Jeb Bush, of course, as he gears up for a likely run for president. That's going to be under a national microscope and with a fair amount of criticism attached to it. Let's begin with the first part of his comment, that rating these schools in Florida, A through F, what about the perception some have that it's done more harm than good?
Like I was saying earlier about Butler's reputation, the kids absolutely know. They know what their school's reputation is, and they know what its grade is. And I don't think that you can go to school every day and not have that affect you to know that I go to an F school. What does that say about me? These kids know. And I don't necessarily think that it's fair to them, because they could be a sixth grader. They could have absolutely no impact on that sixth grade, but yet they're still carrying that stigma with them every day when they go to school.
And when he talks about the environmental and social determinants in the city's urban core that lead to some schools having D or F grades, poverty, family breakdown, those are heavy lifts for a school superintendent and teachers to try to deal with. What about that aspect of what's being done at Butler?
You know, this is not the fault of the kids. They come from situations that they have no control over. And you'll see in tomorrow's paper, there's a story about an open mic night that recently took place at Butler. And these kids wrote poems, and they'll break your heart because they talk about things such as being cold at night, such as seeing family violence, hearing gunshots, gangs. You know, that's something that I didn't grow up with. And so when I went to school, I was ready to learn. But these kids, they walk in, you know, sometimes they're hungry, sometimes their parent wasn't around, maybe their parent can't help them with homework. It is a lot. These teachers at Butler are really putting their all into it every single day, but they are ultimately so much more than teachers because they have to be for these kids. They have to support them so they can be ready to learn.
And let's take a few more of your calls about the transformations going on at Eugene J. Butler Middle School. Dave on the South Side. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. I just wanted to suggest, first of all, that it's been shown pretty much conclusively that the American educational system is appallingly bad by comparison with other industrialized nations. But what's most important is that hopefully there will be some success achieved as a result of these experiments at this particular school. But it's most important not to suggest that if it works in one place, that it'll work everywhere. I think that's been our biggest mistake, is trying to establish a one-size-fits-all educational system when we are going to move towards a knowledge-based economy. It's therefore critical to find new and different ways to reach creativity and knowledge potential that exists in every child. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Well, this is an example of not doing a one-size-fits-all approach. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think that Butler is just a unique school. It was something where they had to try something different, and this is just what they came up with. They put it in place, and in 1 year, it's really shown remarkable results.
549-2937. Amy on the West Side. Hello, Amy. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. I'm well. How are you?
Doing great.
I just wanted to tell your listening audience that I've had the privilege of working with the administrators and teachers at Eugene J. Butler Leadership Academies this year, and they are doing such a fabulous job. I have provided professional development to their staff based on the neuroscience of gender, which is an incredibly important part of the work they're doing there. And I just want our audience to know that there's some science behind why there are gender differences in male and female brain. And I just wanted to share that this morning because I feel, like I said, so privileged to be just such a small part of the success that this school is experiencing. As the reporter said, you walk into that school and it is phenomenal. There is no drama. You are greeted by incredibly articulate, lovely people at the front desk. And it just goes from there. The kids are fabulous. I am a career educator, and I have had both public and private experience during my career, and Eugene J. Butler is doing fabulous work.
Thank you, Amy. And tell us a little bit more about the scientific data when you look at brain differences in the development of teens.
What we know about the adolescent brain, what a lot of people don't understand, is that the brain is constantly going through a variety of developmental changes, and especially in adolescence, we see huge differences when hormones start to change in the adolescent brain. We also know that there are differences in terms of more verbal centers in female brain. Generally speaking, you cannot say every female brain, every male brain, but in the male brain, we know there is a larger portion of the brain dedicated to visual spatial functions. And so what the teachers and administrators are trying to do is understand these differences and how you help really develop verbal centers more so in boys, and how we help girls if we do find a weakness in visual spatials. How you address both of those things so you can close these gender gaps. But these are generally speaking, but we do know the brain goes through a variety of changes. There used to be a huge preponderance of work done on 0 to 3, and we now know through the science that the brain is constantly going through changes, and especially in adolescence, the brain starts to prune off parts that are not being used. So it's critically important to optimize the time we have with kids to really understand what's happening in the brain and how we best design curriculum to reflect these changes that are going on in the brain.
Thanks, Amy. Amy on the West Side. Tessa.
All right. Well, thank you so much for having me on this morning. I did want to say that the last part of the series, Transforming Butler, will run in tomorrow's Times Union and on jacksonville.com. And if you didn't get a chance to call in this morning, I would love if you went to jacksonville.com at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning to take part in a live chat with me. We can talk about Butler and all the great things going on there. So thank you so much for having me this morning.
Thank you. She's Tessa Duval, Education, Children and Families Reporter with the Florida Times Union. Check out her series on Eugene J. Butler Middle School today and tomorrow. Much more still ahead later. Culpepper on sports, but up next, why local protesters are planning to picket the circus. That's in a moment.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First is proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. Saturday, September 12th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Tickets are only $30. Spend the day sharing ideas with colleagues, learning new ways to engage students, and empowering yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
Education coverage on First Coast Connect is made possible in part by a grant from the Chartrand Foundation.
Follow what's happening at WJCT even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Morning Edition is awake around the clock to bring you the latest news.
It's 2:10 in the morning, so still 5 hours left.
The hosts are usually here around 3:30.
You have Ophibia at 4,
uh-huh.
And it's about the Boko Haram ISIS news over the weekend.
Crunch time is 4 a.m.
Until 5 when the show starts.
Hit it. Open.
Good morning, I'm David Green. With
Morning Edition. Up all night to bring you all you need to know. Listen every weekday.
Weekday mornings starting at 5 on 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, the circus is coming to town, the Morocco Shrine Center, this Friday night. But not everyone is happy about that. The treatment of animals at the circus, in particular the circus elephants, is sparking another protest in the city. Adam Sigalski is creative director of Compassion Works International and joins us now with a preview. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. And here's our question to callers right now. What do you think about the controversy over the use of circus elephants? Give us a call, 549-2937. And so this Friday, we're going to have yet another circus in town. Ringling and Brothers was here recently. Now Morocco Shrine is hosting one. Tell us about this event.
Well, I'd like to, some people don't know, but this circus in particular do not have elephants. What they do have is bears, brown bears, European. And the bears are made to do very unnatural tricks, such as wearing muzzles, riding motorcycles. And in our minds, there's just nothing natural about this. And, you know, bears in the wild can be solitary. And so this is just something that we like to kind of make people aware of.
You'll be protesting Friday.
Yes, ma'am.
What's going to be happening?
Well, basically with the Shriners, we'll be standing on the sidewalk holding signs. And compared to the Ringling protest, where we actually will be engaging circus goers, talk to them about the issues, this one where we're away from the actual event. So we'll be standing there holding signs and trying to get people's attention.
What's the response of the Shriners to your complaints and your concerns?
Well, they, you know, what we always get is from the people who have the bears, they're treated well, they're fed, but in our minds, that just isn't good enough. These animals were never meant to be in these circus acts. So you do get the people saying, well, they're well fed and they're safe, as opposed to being in the wild, maybe against poaching and hunting. But to us, that just isn't acceptable.
Why not?
Because these bears were not created on this planet to ride motorcycles, wear muzzles, and do these kind of silly tricks. I mean, a lot of people out there are dog lovers. Would you muzzle your dog and force it to ride in a motorcycle? I mean, my dog would be terrified.
What about Ringling and Brothers? After years of protests, that organization has come out this year and said they're going to phase out the elephants. For whatever reason, the elephants have sort of become the poster child for this issue as controversial. What was your response to that announcement?
Well, to us, it was an incredible victory in one way. I've been protesting circuses in Jacksonville since 2006 with, you know, elephants in mind. I mean, if you look at how I've personally done a short movie on Ringling elephants, how they're treated, they're denied everything natural. They're, as babies, they're forced to perform these tricks with bullhooks, stun guns at Ringling's training facility in Florida, which is all documented. I mean, the people went undercover and they, so we're not making these issues up. What's happening, the elephants have been treated like this to do the tricks we see. So it's a first step. But what about the tigers? Because tigers, you know, we don't think they should be whipped to perform, stuck in cages 22 hours a day, and, you know, schlepped all over the country 11 months out of the year.
If you take your point of view to its logical conclusion, then there should be no circus at all. Since so much of it revolves around the live acts with the animals.
Yeah, I personally don't think any animal should be forced to perform tricks. I mean, Ringling Show is primarily human performers, and if they actually took the animals out of the show, I think it'd be a great show. But we just want people to know that if you compare how the animals are treated on the road, and they do their tricks. And in the wild, it's just, you know, nobody can argue with us on those facts.
You think they can do the circus without any animals and still make a profit?
Of course. Of course. Like, people come out. I've had so many people, when we protest Ringling, we'll stand there after the show. People come out and talk to me all the time saying, you know, they saw the tigers being whipped and made them feel really uneasy. And a lot of people say they're not going back because of that, even this just this year.
The circus has been an American tradition for, gosh, how many years now? Over 100 years. But it's only been in recent years that this issue has sort of achieved critical mass. Why is that?
Well, by you saying it's American tradition, I want to make a point. I get that, you know, protesting over the years I've gotten.
Right.
It is American tradition.
People see it as like mom and apple pie.
Well, so was slavery in 1865. And women's voting rights, you know, they couldn't vote in the early 1900s. And we had child labor issues. And these are all American traditions, and this is a tradition that we think needs to go away.
Let's get your calls right now as protesters prepare to speak out against the circus this Friday night here in Jacksonville. What are your thoughts about the controversy over the use of circus animals? 549-2937. Lynn at the Beaches. Hi, Lynn. Good morning. Hi, Lynn. You're on the air. Okay. Lynn, give us a call back, and the number to join the show is 549-2937. So you're used to then, when you go out and protest, you're used to engaging with people who don't agree with you always.
Yes, actually, I personally like to go up and talk to people one-on-one because I want to be asked questions. It's an open dialogue. Our protesting group, compared to some others around the country, we're very peaceful. We're passive. We do not yell at anybody. We don't want to make any children feel uncomfortable. And I want an open dialogue because that's the only way you really can get true change. We are not the enemy. We don't want to make people feel guilty about going to these circuses. We just want to know that that we are on the right side of history. And years from now, when these animals are taken out of the circus, people will look back and go, wow, those people were right, standing out there fighting for the animals.
What are the most common counter arguments you hear?
Well, the one you just made about American tradition, and the big one we get is, you know, I had so many people tell me they're treated better than you. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I haven't been beaten to do my tricks at work. I'm a designer. So we just think that also we get there safer because they're not being poached. Well, would you rather live in a cell and be safe or live free on the streets and take your chances at either having an accident or being hurt yourself? So those are the primary counter arguments we get.
Yeah, and the lines all of a sudden are jamming up now as we speak with Adam Sigalski, Creative Director of Compassion Works International. There'll be a protest this Friday at the Morocco Shrine as the circus comes to town. Let's get Autumn from Orange Park on the air. Autumn, good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'm a total supporter of taking circus animals out of the circus. I agree that human performers, they're more interesting to me personally. I've never taken my children to see the circus because I have a strong affinity for animals and because I feel very strongly that they shouldn't be used in that way. So I'm a supporter.
All right. That's Autumn in Orange Park.
Well, she has my sentiments exactly. You know, she echoes a lot of people. I actually got some really nice letter one time, handwritten from a woman who went to the circus, and she wrote me and saying after how peaceful we were and that she went home and did some research and that she's never taking her children to the circus again.
Joe in Jacksonville. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi, I'm a Freemason, and I think that the Shriners do more than enough things to offset anything that could be considered animal abuse. I mean, this is actually something that's been done for hundreds of years. What would you say would be considered an actual... What would you say would be considered an actual ethical...
get to the point, Joe.
Yeah, sorry. What would you say would be considered an actual ethical use of animals in the circus?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Thanks for that question, Adam.
I just don't think, you know, the Shriners could have their circus. They rent these animals from the Rosary Bears, who have numerous violations of USDSD complaints against them. So we're not against the Shriners. We're against them renting animals. They don't own any of these animals, and they could have this show without it. So putting a muzzle on a bear, making it riding a motorcycle, is just, to me, it's unethical and it's unmoral.
William in Jacksonville. Go ahead, William. What are your thoughts?
Well, I understand how you feel about the animals being treated unfairly in the circus, but how does he also feel about the animals being treated in SeaWorld and the rodeos? Do you protest those events also?
Thanks, William. And SeaWorld, of course, too, has come under fire in recent years, in particular after a documentary gained some traction about the treatment of the whales at SeaWorld. But what about his question?
Actually, I'm against the use of animals in rodeos, especially calf roping in particular. I mean, I've done extensive research. We have protested rodeos, not here in Jacksonville, but in other parts of the country. And, you know, having a baby calf and a grown man roping at 30 miles an hour and snapping it back, a lot of the calves, people don't realize, are euthanized behind the stage because of, you know, punctured lungs, broken trachea. And to your point on SeaWorld, I mean, the documentary Blackfish, I mean, these poor orcas are stolen from the wild, and then they're artificially inseminated, their lifespans are short. And if anyone who saw the documentary, you know, it's hard to even fathom, you know, SeaWorld, how they tell people that they are helping, you know, animals in the wild.
Not everyone agrees with you, in particular those that don't think animals should have the same status as human beings. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Those that don't share the same level of compassion you do for animals, what would you say to those who are listening and they say, well, yes, this isn't great, but we're not talking about people being abused or potentially abused. These are animals. What would you say to those folks?
Well, I just think at some point, you know, with our humanity, we can give these animals a certain base level of rights where we're not abusing them for these shows, archaic shows. And if the problem is people only see the one side, the entertainment, if they actually would think about that animal and research how they're treated behind the scenes, I don't know anyone who could agree with the way these animals are treated behind the scenes. But do your diligent research on it.
Betsy in Gainesville. Hi, Betsy. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, hey. Yeah, thanks for this topic. I'm passionate about it. I'm a strong advocate for protection and prevention of cruelty to animals. They aren't on human status, and they deserve moral and ethical treatment. And I'm a very big supporter of the ASPCA. I encourage your audience to check them out because they have a lot of impact on creating laws that protect our feathered and furry and four-legged friends. And they are our friends. We cannot live. The web of life is incomplete without our friends amongst us being cared for and loved in a humane and ethical way. So I'm so grateful to you, sir, for your work that you're doing, and keep it up. And, you know, maybe soon our dear friends will have the freedom that they deserve and the love that they deserve.
That's Betsy in Gainesville calling in. James on the north side. Hello, James. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing, Melissa?
Great.
I got a question for you. Now, the guy keeps saying, now, I wanted to take my kids to the circus and, you know, have them enjoy themselves, but he's saying that the animals actually, are they getting beaten? I've been to circus before, and I know they crack the whip as a performance type thing, but I've never seen them actually hit the animals. I mean, is this really going on?
Thanks for the call, James.
Yes, it is actually going on. I mean, you don't get a tiger to sit up and perform without the fear of pain, and what you see is kind of what in the show, they don't actually hit the tigers per se, but they're cracking the whip close. But behind the scenes, those tigers are being hit by the whip, and they're kept in cages. You know, if I've been back and documented it, these tigers will be in cages 20 hours a day, if not longer, pacing back and forth like a large cat carrier. To me, that's abuse. It's almost like solitary confinement. And the elephants, those elephants that stand on their to-do handstands are hit with bull hooks. Stun guns are used on them. They're taken away from their mother. So these are all documented, you know, cases of abuse, which we have seen. And you can go on the internet and do your own research and find these photos. They're everywhere.
It's a hot issue, and we appreciate you giving us your thoughts about it. That protest will be happening Friday night. Adam Sigalski of Jack's Protest Thanks for being
with
us.
Can I make one more comment?
Sure.
I'd like to say, kind of give a shout to JSO. During all of our protests, JSO really, you know, is there for us, protecting our rights to protest. And they, you know, over the past years of doing this, it's just been, I've seen other cities that don't have the, you know, haven't had afforded the same rights. But JSO has been great to us. I just want to kind of give them a shout out for letting these protests go so smoothly.
Sure thing. And we're right back. Keep listening.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
New name, new look, great information. Join us for our annual Women's Health Conference, Girls Day Out, August 15th, Hyatt Regency Hotel. Good for You is a day of celebrating women's health planned just for you. Great speakers, great food, health screenings, and so much more. Hosted by Baptist Health and WJCT. For a complete list of speakers or to purchase your tickets, log on to WJCT/goodforyou.
This summer, WJCT will introduce several new programs to our weekend schedule. We want your help deciding which new shows come to the First Coast. Starting May 10th, tune in Sundays at 1 o'clock for a special preview of The Moth Radio Hour, Snap Judgment, Wits, and Studio 360. Help us decide what you hear on 89.9. Get more information at wjct.org/weekends.
Welcome back. Well, he's a beloved community leader here in Jacksonville, making his mark in both business and philanthropy. Karen Brittany Mathis of the Daily Record talks with Cleve Warren in today's First Coast Success.
Cleve Warren is a Jacksonville native with a long track record in finance, education, and community service. To recognize his efforts, Leadership Jacksonville honored him this year as a community trustee. And he also was honored by the First Coast Business Hall of Fame. Warren is the chief financial officer of Florida State College at Jacksonville, a position he's held for 2 years. Warren's latest passion includes the Valor Academy of Leadership Charter School for Boys and the Virtue Academy of Arts and Sciences Charter School for Girls. Cleve Warren, welcome to First Coast Success.
Thank you, Karen.
You're a Jacksonville native. Talk about your childhood and what you wanted to be when you grew up.
Well, it was what I would describe as fun, really. I grew up in a matriarchal environment with my grandmother as the leader of the family and her four daughters, one of them my mother, and they provided guidance to 8 grandchildren. As a child, I think I just grew up with a lot of guidance from family, freedom to be independent, to think independently, to explore and experiment, to learn from those experiences, and to be encouraged about education, that it was important to success. You know, we moved from generations of slavery to Jim Crow to segregation in our society to one where we felt as a community that education was the important key, and it probably still is, to ultimate success. So it didn't really matter what we were graduating from as one of the 8 grandchildren of my grandmother. She was there. If it was kindergarten graduation or high school graduation, and in my case, college. So education was important, and I was encouraged to pursue it. So for every learning experience I could imagine myself participating in as a kid, I don't ever remember being told no. And where resources needed to be mustered together to get me there, I was there.
Now, how did that lead to such a long career in finance?
It didn't lead to it at all, quite frankly. I had no desire to be in the world of finance as a youngster. My great desire was to be offensive center or right guard for the Green Bay Packers. I haven't grown an inch since the ninth grade. So I had to come to the great realization that I was never going to be Fuzzy Thurston or Jerry Kramer. But I still wanted to stay close to athletics. I had a great desire to be a professional athletic trainer. But I just happened to graduate from high school in the midst of the Vietnam War. And I ended up volunteering for military duty rather than waiting on the draft. But when I came back home 4 years later, determined to go back to school, I discovered Barnett Bank and fell in love with the place, the people, the atmosphere, and the frontier that it offered for somebody like me to learn that skill and to become a commercial banker.
Well, and Barnett Bank was very encouraging of community service as well, and you have developed a very strong track record in community service. Mm-hmm. How did that come about?
You're right. It was an organization whose culture was one of community service, community involvement, and the bank encouraged all of us, if you will, no matter where you were in the rank order in the organization, to get involved in the community. They allowed you time for those involvements and made a financial investment in them as well. I think I just drank the Kool-Aid, you know, and maybe there was a seed in me somewhere that the Kool-Aid watered, and it blossomed into an attitude about community service that I just can't shake. So wherever I am, whatever I am doing vocationally, I don't allow it to diminish my engagement in my community. This is the place I grew up in. I love it. And I owe it to it to being involved at not just some levels, but every level. I feel it robbery not to be an advocate about those things that I have a passion for.
How would you describe your leadership style?
It is one of encouraging people to, in fact, lead. Some have said that a good leader is a person who grooms others to lead. My leadership style is to give people room to do just that. And then the onus that you have as mentor and or leader is to groom them, to give them exposure. That's what happened to me in the Barnett organization. I recall very well those occasions when my mentor, Hugh Jones, would drag me, if you will, to places and then leave me to swim. But it was good for Cleve's growth to have me to be comfortable talking to the people that who would later be the folk I'd be trying to develop business from. My leadership style then is the same, is to bring folk along, expose them to challenges, to help them to grow. I learned a lot from just listening to folk. And hopefully they've become a part of my practice and how I lead myself.
Do you have any advice for community leaders today?
I think it all has to do with being courageous. You know, there is still much to do in our community, particularly when it comes to how we bring people together around, I won't call them common causes. They are common, but I would call them the difficult ones. And too often we just subject ourselves to groupthink when the time has come, maybe even past due, for us to be independent thinkers, to be courageous enough to step out of the box and to say, to hell with the groupthink. Here's what really needs to happen in our community, and let's stand up for what is right to do. If we have more people like that who are willing to let the goodness in them be the basis of their actions, we could take a leap, quite frankly, as a community.
Well, Cleve Warren, honored community leader, thanks for joining First Coast Success.
Thank you, Kara. Thank you very much.
You can read the partial transcript of Karen's talk with Cleve Warren in today's Daily Record. And a quick break, Cole Pepper is up next with sports.
On the next Fresh Air, how yoga as we know it was created through a series of surprising meetings of East and West. It was popularized in the U.S. by a Russian woman who first learned about yoga in a book by yogi Ramacharaka, who is actually a writer from Chicago. There's lots more in the new book, The Goddess Pose. We'll talk with the author Michelle Goldberg. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, a big weekend on the diamond for the Gators.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Cole Pepper is here now with a look at all the week's sports. Happy Monday.
Good morning, and I should say probably a big weekend on the diamonds
yes.
for the Gators, both softball and baseball. Let's start with baseball, where the Gators clinched a lot of the NCAA Super Regionals yesterday. They beat Florida Atlantic, so now they'll host the winner of the Tallahassee Regional in Gainesville this weekend as a best of three. The winner of that one advances to the College World Series. That Tallahassee Regional could be won by Florida State, who plays today at 2, and if they win that one or they win the second game at 6, either one, they'll advance to the Regionals. It would be a Florida versus Florida State matchup in Gainesville for the right to go to the College World Series. Remember, Florida State is seeking their first ever College World Series championship.
Right.
They keep getting there, and they've just never won it under Mike Martin, which is one of those amazing stats considering the success they've had in Tallahassee. Now for Gators softball, they've advanced to the College World Series in Oklahoma City, and in fact, yesterday, they moved on to the championship round. So now it's the best of three. They'll take on Michigan for the title. Gators looking for back-to-back national championships in softball. Think about this. As bad a season as the Gator football and basketball seasons were, by the standards they've had in Gainesville, they've already won a national title in gymnastics at Florida this year. They've got a handful of conference championships in other sports. They could wind up winning a softball and a baseball national title. So not a bad way to bounce back.
Heck yeah.
Of course, you ask Gator Nation, and it's all about football, isn't it?
So
we'll see how things turn around in the upcoming season. Jaguars back on the field today for their off-season practice. A lot of talk last week about how different Blake Bortles looked. He's slimmed down. He's worked on his footwork and his delivery in the offseason. And while the Jaguars have added a lot of offensive weapons for him this offseason, it's really going to come down to Bortles taking that next step. This is the number one story for the Jaguars in 2015. Does Blake Bortles take that next substantial step forward? Jaguars also announced, by the way, that the final day of minicamp in mid-June will be open to the public. Admission is free, but you must register on the Jaguars website in advance in order to attend.
Sure. And what are your thoughts about Bortles?
We'll see. I mean, I think he's got some tools. I think his approach, you know, it was interesting. If you compare him to Byron Leftwich and to Blaine Gabbert, the last two quarterbacks the Jaguars drafted, you see some things that those two guys didn't have. Gabbert famously didn't have the heart to stand in there against the rush, didn't necessarily have the leadership abilities, wouldn't take responsibility for what was going on when things weren't going well. Bortles does all those things. Byron Leftwich was unwilling to work on his throwing mechanics. He was brave in the pocket, but he was not a guy who would work on his mechanics. Bortles, first offseason, goes and works on his mechanics. So I like the work ethic. I like the approach he's taking. He's got the heart to stand in there. He has to be better. And part of that is being more comfortable to be aggressive with the ball. Part of it is the offensive line's got to play better. Running game's got to be better. And the receivers have to be better. They've made some moves in the offseason to strengthen all of those areas on offense. With the exception of the wide receivers, they did bring in Julius Thomas at tight end. But they did draft a receiver in the fifth round, Rashad Green from Florida State. They did look at bringing in potentially another wide receiver in free agency. Didn't wind up happening, but they strengthened the offensive line in the draft and free agency. They strengthened the running game in the draft with T.J. Yeldon out of Alabama. So they're putting the weapons around him in order for him to take that next step. He won't be a finished product this year, but he's got to make it very clear that he's not playing quarterback like a rookie in the NFL.
We'll have to watch him. In the meantime, you, of course, the face and voice of the Armada, they're kind of looking ahead after a rough stretch.
Really was a rough week. The last 9 days, they've lost three matches, including the U.S. Open Cup in Richmond on Wednesday. They saw their hopes to win a spring championship come to an end Saturday when they lost at home for the first time ever. Their final home match of the season is Sunday against Ottawa at Community First Park. That's a 4 p.m. kickoff. Good news for the Armada, though. Saturday's game was a sellout. Jacksonville continues to lead the North American Soccer League in attendance.
Yeah.
It was a great crowd, and I was there calling the game, and there was a point, it was 4-0. They're losing, and in the second half, we've got a shot there midway through the second half of the crowd in Section 904, the supporters section, doing their chants, kind of rocking back and forth. The whole place was packed. It was a
very cool.
It's a great environment, and it's only a matter of time till they get things turned around at home. Still, though, they're in competition and will be looking for a playoff spot for the higher seed. You can win one in the spring championship, one with the fall championship, and then two others for the postseason are awarded over the course of the entire year.
Let's hope they do well. It's great to have a new team in town. The Suns are at home, and Rounds at the Grounds is coming up. That's something that's happening with them this week.
That's right, and a part of a five-game homestand for the Suns at the baseball grounds. They'll play Monday through Friday. So a quick chance to see that. I've been a part of Rounds with the Grounds in the past, announcing, not playing, but a great fundraiser. And I know Telvin Smith of the Jaguars is involved as well.
That's right. Sharks won in L.A. They're back home against, as you call them, the hated Orlando Predators.
This, I mean, you can't say Orlando Predators without hated Orlando Predators as part of this. This all started, there used to be a big rivalry because Jeff Bushy, the managing partner of the Sharks, his brother used to own Orlando. Now he's involved in elsewhere. But the rivalry really started there between those two guys. And you may remember a couple of years ago there were some less than friendly billboards purchased by the Predators here in Jacksonville.
Talking a little smack.
And listen, I understand it. Orlando is a par city compared to Jacksonville, and this is just the way it happens. And this one actually happens to be a battle for first place after a very slow start. The Sharks have won four straight, so this is a big one on Saturday at the arena. And that's just part of a very busy sports week in Jacksonville that includes powerboats.
That's right. That's going to be fun to see on the river.
P1 powerboats back on the river. And there are two. One, just the event itself is kind of a cool thing. The other part of this, this will be seen worldwide to about 1 billion homes. So it's going to showcase Jacksonville and the St. John's River as part of it.
Very exciting. Always great to catch up with Cole Pepper. Have a great week.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that's our show. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.